At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Molly Forbes. Molly is an author, campaigner and journalist and the executive director and founder of the Body Happy organisation. The Body Happy organisation aims to help adults help the children in their care be friends with their bodies by creating environments that allow the body image of children and young people to thrive. Molly has written 2 books about body image, provides workshops to schools with educators and children, and holds corporate training sessions for brands invested in creating a culture of positive body esteem. Absolutely love this episode with Molly. Molly has such a fresh approach to supporting children with their body image and to improve their self-esteem. And I just love the perspective that she brings in terms of rather than putting the emphasis on children and trying to scare them away from the body image ideals that we have in society, it's really about asking them to have reflection on that and bringing in parents and carers as well, so that we can all benefit from positive body image.
Oh, it's so nice to meet you. I feel like I already know you, but obviously we've actually never met.
No, I know, it's so strange, isn't it? Beauty of the internet.
Absolutely, yeah. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm all right. Good. I wasn't very well last week, so I'm glad that this is this week and not last week.
Yeah.
I ended up being really poorly last week, but I'm on the mend, so.
Oh, bless you. Yeah. What sort of thing was it?
I had an infection, so I ended up having to go into hospital, which was really not fun. But antibiotics have sorted it out, so yeah.
Wow.
No, I'm fine.
Jesus, that sounds scary.
Yeah, it was like I went to the GP and they were like, right, you're actually really ill and we're going to do an urgent referral. So I was straight into hospital from the GP surgery, and then they wanted to admit me, but I managed to come home like late that night, go to sleep in my own bed, and then go back into hospital early the next day. But it's fine. I've got antibiotics and they've sorted it out. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Well, that is a good story. Good healthcare story. You don't often get them.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Well, I'm super excited to speak to you. I think it's come at quite a nice time because you've obviously launched your book now, which is super exciting. So I guess just for the listeners, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do?
Yeah, so my name's Molly. I'm the founder and executive director of the Body Happy organisation. We're a social enterprise promoting positive body image in children and young people. I'm also an author and a campaigner. So my first book, Body Happy Kids, is for adults and anyone who is around children. And my second book, Everybody, is for young readers, so that middle grade readership, age 9+, and it's being published by Puffin on the 20th of June this year, so it's very exciting.
Oh, wow, that is extremely exciting. Puffin as well, that's a big publisher.
Yeah, and it's a thing of beauty. I'm so, like, it's been illustrated by Molly Cronin, who's an amazing comic book illustrator. And yeah, she's just really like brought the whole thing to life. And the team at Puffin absolutely just understood the vision for the book. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was just a joy to work on. So I'm just really excited for it to be out in the world now and to see children reading it.
Yeah, that is amazing. I love that the author is Molly and person that did the drawings as well is also Molly. That's amazing.
I know, Molly.
Yeah, that is amazing. So what was it? Why did you start the Body Happy organisation? What was it that inspired you to do that?
So I'm a mum. I should have probably mentioned that in my little introduction. I've got two daughters and I used to be a journalist. So I've worked in the media industry in some form or another for the last 2 decades now, nearly. And I have had my own sort of complicated relationship with my body, as many of us have, because we live in the culture that we live in. And I think when I became a mum, I became really aware that I wanted to kind of break that cycle. I know it's a cliche and we hear it all the time. And often it is when people become parents that they become aware of some of the issues that they've experienced themselves, and they don't want to pass that stuff on. And that was definitely the case for me. I started campaigning on the way that diet products were advertised around children back in 2019. And that came off the back of having written about this subject, written about body image in children, using my skills as a journalist to kind of delve into some of the research around it. I was on a TV show back in 2019, which was on Channel 4, all around body image. I was one of the hosts on that show. And I think the more that I started writing and talking about this subject, the more I was hearing from people, particularly adults, who were similarly concerned about the rising numbers of children who were suffering with feeling like their bodies weren't good enough and suffering with poor body image, and then all the related issues that can come with that, but not really knowing what to do about it. And I think maybe because I come from a journalist background and I'm really interested in kind of culture and the culture study piece, I was really keen on not just pursuing this subject from like an individual perspective. So not just making the focus all on giving children resilience skills and resilience tools to build up resilience to these messages, but actually wanting to do something about removing some of the messages in the first place that are coming for them. So the Body Happy organization was founded from that place of wanting to, okay, we want to equip teachers particularly and schools with the knowledge and skills and resources needed to create environments that really allow kids' body image to thrive. And rather than putting all of the onus on children to navigate this really messy, difficult, you know, landscape that's actually constantly telling them that there are good bodies and bad bodies and really kind of promoting that poor body esteem, we want to try and help adults that are working with kids to create an environment that actually celebrates different types of bodies and gives them a fighting chance to, you know, not have to work so hard to build resilience in the first place. Resilience building is obviously part of it because we have to talk to children and give them some of those skills, but it's also about working with the adults. And that's really where it came from. So it was organically born from my work campaigning on the issue, and we did a crowdfunder back in 2020 now, and that crowdfunder basically enabled us to run some free workshops for schools, but the demand was just way more than, you know, and then it just became really clear that we needed to do this as an actual proper thing, which is when we became incorporated. And the social enterprise model seemed, you know, we thought that would be a good idea because then we could reinvest, you know, some of the money that we were earning from trading back into, like, you know, all of these other projects that we're doing, rather than just being totally reliant on fundraising and donations.
I mean, it sounds absolutely amazing, and I think it's a sad reality that it is something that, you know, was so popular and so needed. But equally, I think the thing I really like that you said there was it's not just kind of saying to children, this is the message and you need to kind of be resilient towards it. But also it's not just saying like, okay, we're going to go to X age and go below them and we're just going to educate them. It's really, you've got that holistic view. And I really like that because that's going to help to change the whole of society with a focus on children. But it's interesting what you were saying as well, because I just got back off holiday with my mum and we were having a little bit of a discussion about like body image and things like that. And she said, I feel so guilty because the reason I have the issues I have that I've passed on to you is because of, you know, the generation I was brought up in and the way that my mum was because of the messaging she had. My mum said, you know, I wish so much that I kind of had stopped that and then made that so that you then didn't have those things, those thoughts. And I was like, well, you know, that's, you can't feel guilty about that because at the end of the day, why would you question anything that's so normal in society? And the fact that you're now supporting me in, you know, breaking those messages, and my mum is very anti-diet now, which is wonderful to hear. That's then helping the younger generation by them saying, actually, yeah, we're going to stop this now so you guys don't have to feel like that.
Exactly. And I think that there is a lot of feelings of guilt and shame around these subjects. And I think particularly as mothers and the female caregivers in our children's lives, we feel, I know I have felt a lot of responsibility in terms of not just, you know, not perpetuating the issues, but fixing the issues without really any self-compassion, to recognize that I'm a product of the culture that I'm, you know, that I've grown up in. And actually, you know, I'm also living in this culture as well. So I think that, you know, so we have to be really careful that the victims of some of these like really insidious messages don't end up being the people who are held responsible for fixing all of, you know, the ills to do with, you know, these societal like unrealistic beauty standards and, you know, anti-fatness that pervades culture, you know, our society. And I think that actually that's kind of my point, it's on all of us. And I think what I sometimes get quite frustrated because conversations particularly around children and body image, or like the adolescents and teenagers, always focus on social media. And I think that, that's valid, and it's important to be aware of the harms of social media, give children tools to use it in a sensible way. Media literacy is super important. Critical thinking is super important. I stand by all of that. But there is a big but. Actually, there's evidence to show that there are children as young as three who are feeling bad about their bodies. Now, those toddlers are not on TikTok. You know, when you watch cartoons like Peppa Pig, you see the lack of body diversity on Disney, you know, Disney princesses. We know that children are being weighed in school when they're in reception. Like all of the, you know, the way that healthy eating is often taught in schools, all of these things are also part of the problem. And so I think we need to take a step back and look at the bigger picture. And that might feel a little bit overwhelming and scary because it means, oh, we can't just blame social media. It's not just on Mark Zuckerberg to kind of fix it. But I actually look at that and think that's quite an empowering way to look at it, because actually we all have responsibility, but actually isn't that great? Because we can all do something about it. So no matter how big or small that piece, that action is, whether it's in our own home, just, you know, pointing out body ideals when they show up in our kids' cartoons and, you know, talking to our kids about it, making sure we've got a diverse range of bodies in the books that they're reading and we're not talking about diets, etc., at the dinner table, or in the classroom, if we're a teacher and we're making sure that, you know, our classroom displays are celebrating body diversity and, you know, we're talking about what our bodies can do instead of what they look like, and we're talking about health in a really holistic way. Like, actually, these are all really empowering things that we can do to actually help create that kind of foundation of positive body esteem, rather than just being like, oh, actually, there's nothing we can do about it. It's all out of our hands. Everything's awful. Let's just blame social media. Because what that does is it negates, it's quite disempowering. And it also quite conveniently takes all the responsibility away from us as individuals to do something about it. And these are systemic issues. They're massive, but we're all individuals living in a system. So we can all take some kind of responsibility there and do something about it, even if those are small steps, like tuning into a podcast, listening to a podcast, sharing it with a friend. Like all of us have the opportunity to create ripples of positive change just in our everyday actions.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think you're so right there with the social media thing, in that it's quite an easy thing to blame and be like, oh, it's social media, you know, what have you. But, you know, your example there of 3-year-olds being uncomfortable in their body. Also, you know, we've social media is a very new thing. People have been concerned about the way that they looked way before social media happened. But I really like that idea of, well, of, you know, taking on the responsibility yourself, and we can all do things. And I think often people are like, oh, but I don't even know where to start. But one thing that I was just thinking as you were saying there is, like, if you're watching a Disney program, for example, and you don't see body diversity, I think we internalize that. Somebody kind of, you know, that doesn't think about it might not even recognize the fact that there's no body diversity in it. But I think the first step is that recognition, to be able to say, like, oh, you know, there is no body diversity, and how does that make me feel? But one thing I wanted to ask you in line with that is how to have that conversation with a child. You know, is it as straightforward as, like, you acknowledge that there's no body diversity, so you ask the child, how does that make them feel? Or I don't know, I feel like people listening might be like, how do I even have that conversation with a child, let alone myself?
How do you even broach it? So I think it depends whether you're having that conversation in your own home or in the classroom, because obviously your relationship with the child will impact how you have these conversations. And I think also I want to be really clear that there isn't necessarily a right or wrong way. And that can be quite frustrating, because there's not like a quick fix. Follow this script and it will kind of lead to this. I think the first thing is to normalize the topic, you know, normalize the topic of conversation and make it so that it's not an off limits conversation. Now, you might do that through the environment that your child is absorbing. So picture books, having picture books with a diverse range of bodies and pointing out all the different ways that the bodies are, you know, bodies are look different and the ways that, you know, our bodies can be, and celebrating that. It might be in the art that you have in your home. You know, it might be in, if you notice, you know, Peppa Pig making fun of Daddy Pig's tummy, point that out and say, oh, how do you think Daddy Pig feels when Peppa Pig is saying that about Daddy Pig's tummy? You know, and using that as a conversation starter. What I find interesting now, so my youngest daughter is 9 now. So she's, you know, and she has, we've really been having this conversation since she was tiny. And it was really interesting. The other day we were watching one of the Despicable Me films. I think it was on Netflix. So it's probably like the third one or something. And we watched like the first 20 minutes and we were just chilling on the sofa watching it. And she actually said, oh, that first 20 minutes of that film, there've been no black people in this film. And she noticed there was a complete lack of diversity in the first 20 minutes of the film. She was the one who noticed it. And then she said, oh, but, you know, at least there's no fat phobia. They're not saying that the fat characters are the baddies. And then they had, then there was some anti-fatness that came in. One of the characters was like dressed up and was wearing a fat suit and took off this suit and was thin underneath as his disguise to break in and steal a diamond. And she pointed it out. She recognized it. And she said, oh, that's interesting. They've made that as part of the joke. So that man's fat body and fat tummy are part of the joke. So actually, that's not very kind, is it? And she was able, because we've been having these conversations, but actually children, when I go in to do workshops in schools, when I do a lot of workshops with all different age groups, they are really open to having these conversations. They just need an opportunity to have them, you know? So I will ask them. And I think really it's about asking questions and then just being curious about what their responses are, giving them an opportunity to, you know, explore some of these ideas. So saying, how do you think that might make someone feel? Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that in Encanto, it's, you know, that's like a really like happy, it's a great film, isn't it? Oh, have you noticed on that, what's the song, the famous song in Encanto? There's a line in it where it was really big a couple of years ago. It was everywhere, this song. And in the film, one of the lines is, they told me I'd grow a gut and just like they said, and the character's buttons pop off and his tummy gets big. And then he like walks off camera, and it's a split second. It's a split second. But in that film, which is a very progressive Disney film, it was hailed as being, you know, oh, we don't have the main character isn't this willowy thin, you know, she's got glasses. So they were saying, you know, it's great. But actually, there's still anti-fatness in that film. Mm-hmm. And I think just recognizing it and saying, oh, did you notice that? Noticing it and then having a, you know, a conversation about it. And sometimes my kids are like rolling their eyes and they're like, oh, mum, we know. But but what's interesting is when I don't point it out, they now start to point it out. So, you know, that is, I think that that is quite a powerful thing. I think sometimes as parents, we're scared to point things out. And the adults around children, we're scared to, because we think, oh, we don't know what the answers are. And I think that actually you don't need to know what the answers are. It's not about having the answers. It's about being curious and being curious to what the children think. And that's actually quite an empowering thing as well, because I think the other thing is that we might think we've had a difficult relationship with our own bodies, right? We've had a difficult relationship with food or movement or, you know, our own struggles. And then we don't feel equipped to be guiding our kids through being a human being with a body growing up in the culture that we live in. So we steer clear from these subjects. But I think that actually you don't have to have all this stuff worked out. You can learn alongside your children. And actually that can be quite an empowering thing for children. One of the most empowering things we can teach kids is that grown-ups don't know everything all the time.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's kind of nice, actually, and I appreciate that with my mum as well, is that we're both kind of at the same position in life in terms of like navigating body image and societal pressures and things like that. And it's nice to almost come alongside each other and be learning together and growing together. But I think it's so interesting there what you were saying. I've never even thought about this before, but when you were talking about Disney princesses and stuff there, I was thinking in a lot of the movies, the princess is always very slim, very beautiful, and the baddie is always, I mean, the one that came to my mind first off was Ursula, and she is in a larger body. Yeah. And it's like, from such a young age, you probably internalize that being slim means that you're gentle and beautiful and everybody loves you, but being fat means that you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of movies as well, it is always sort of like either the baddie or the butt of the joke is the larger character.
Yeah, and gender stereotypes have a huge part of this as well, right? So if we think like from a really simplistic way of thinking about it, and children again can understand these conversations and these concepts. So with gender stereotypes, we're teaching, you know, there's a binary, and we're teaching girls that, it, you know, that girls, to meet that kind of perfect gender idea of what it is to be a girl, they have to be like soft, gentle, kind. The princess is like feeding a dormouse, or like got birds like, you know, flying and on through the open window and perching on her shoulder, you know,
and singing. And
exactly. meanwhile, boys, to be the hero in the story, they need to be strong and brave, and, you know, they need to take up space. And so what does that look like? It looks like, you know, the girl, to be kind and gentle, has to have long flowing hair, probably have white skin or pale skin, thin willowy waist, and she has to look like, that's what a princess looks like, and that's what she has to look like. Whereas a boy has to have big, you know, what does a strong, brave person look like? They've got big muscles, they've got, you know, they're tall, and so and they're taking up space. And actually, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely, when you lay it out like that, it is ridiculous. And the other side of that is that then anyone who doesn't fit that kind of mold, they either can't be the center of the story, or if they are, they're the center of the story in like a comic way. So they're often either the baddie, or they're the best friend, or they're the kind of comedy character. You know, even like Olaf on Frozen, who's like the comedy, he's like the round, rotund snowman, you know, like he's, there's, bodies are used as a signifier to signify other aspects of a person's personality. Mm-hmm. And children learn this right from toddlerhood. They learn this really early. They pick up on this. It's all linked in with you know, the way that they're thinking about gender and gender stereotypes as well. We can't separate these things. So actually, you know, getting children, so in our if I'm doing a workshop for year sixes or year fives even, we will ask them, oh, what could the impact, you know, do any of you play computer games? And often they'll say yeah, and they'll play things like UEFA or Roblox or like some of these like computer games. And I'll say, okay, so tell me about the football game that you like playing. Do all the characters on the football game have different types of bodies, or are they all quite similar in terms of their shape? And they'll say they're all similar. What do they look like? They look like footballers. Okay, well, what does a footballer look like? Oh, they're tall, they're athletic, they're muscly, they're thin. Okay, that's interesting. Tell me a bit more about that. Okay, so what might happen if you were playing that game and you didn't have a body that looked like that? Oh, well, you might think that you can't be a footballer too. And these are year fives and sixes, so year 9, 10 and 11 year olds who are able to see the impact of lack of representation and how that might impact them. And then we'll have a conversation, well, is that true? Well, no, actually. And what's really interesting is that at the end of these workshops, often what kids will tell us is it's not just made them think differently about their own bodies, but it's made them think differently about the judgments that they're making of other children's bodies. Mm-hmm. So we get kids to fill in a survey for us at the end of a workshop. And one of the things that came up in a recent one was that it was obviously like a group of friends who'd all been like sitting right, and they'd written like similar things, but they were saying, we're going to invite more kids to play football with us at lunchtime and not make you know, not judge people and say you can't play football just for how they look. And I think that's a really important, that when I'm talking about creating an environment that celebrates all bodies, that's the impact of it, you know, because what's the impact of a child being told you can't play football with us because you're not good at football. You're not good at football because you've got a bigger body or whatever. You don't look like a footballer. Well, then the impact on that individual child could be huge. It could be massive. It could be the trigger of, you know, all sorts of like worrying behavior. Whereas actually, like, it shows that when we approach body image as like a we issue and not a me issue, so we approach it from this perspective that, you know, with all of our workshops at the Body Happy organization, we don't just want children to be feeling better about their own bodies. We want to be encouraging them to think about how they treat other children whose bodies don't look or function like their own. Mm-hmm. And I think that example is like a really, it's a good indication of how powerful just one conversation can be.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely an indication of that, but I also think it's an indication of how strong the impact of body image and the way that you perceive body image is as well. And I think a lot of the time, you know, I sit here and, you know, I like to think that I'm very inclusive and wouldn't judge anybody, but I think we all do have internalized biases. And I think actually being able to have an open conversation about your internalized bias and then kind of how am I going to shift that or reframe that, both for children and for adults, because I'm sure, you know, in the same respect, kids are much more honest. I think they say things and they're much more open to talk about things, but in the same way that, you know, those children said, we're going to invite more people to play football with us because, you know, you don't have to have a certain body type, I'm probably, you know, pretty sure that adults also maybe will judge somebody by the way that they look and then maybe not associate themselves with them or be friends with them. And I think it's a really difficult thing to have that conversation with yourself, because nobody wants to be that person that's excluding someone based on the way that they look. But also, it's like we were saying before, in terms of the guilt and shame, I think being able to be honest with yourself and say, I have this internalized bias and I'm going to challenge that, is so much more powerful than, you know, just saying, oh, I'm just going to try and squish it down because that's a really horrible thought to have. I think you can have so much more outcome from the kind of honesty and then trying to change that.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's confronting. Mm-hmm. And I always really love it if we're doing, so we do teach a like the dream for us is that we would work with the school, we would do teacher training with the teachers, and then the teachers would use our resources with the kids, and we might come in and do like some nice sessions with the kids, but that's kind of a nice added extra. But I love it when schools bring us in, and they haven't brought us in for teacher training, and they've just brought us in for like a one-off workshop because it's kind of a tick box exercise, and that's fine. Like we're honored to be invited in and work with the children. But I really love it when you can see the teachers listening and like the cogs are turning. And I have had multiple sessions where the teachers have come up to me and said, oh, do you know what? This is like, I've learned loads from this. And it's a session for year threes and fours, you know, they're like 7 and 8 year olds, and the teachers are learning from it. And the teachers will say, you know, oh, do you know what? This is actually challenging some of my own stereotypes around, you know, bodies. And that could be the starting point. You know, it just shows that these ripples of change can happen in the places where you're least expecting it, even if you're not going out searching for it. But you're right. It's confronting. And I think that there is a certain level of self-awareness that is required. But luckily, all the people that I engage with, so whether they are teachers who have, you know, been booked on to some staff training by their head teacher, or whether it's people like coming across my book in the library or coming across an Instagram post on the internet, whatever, generally people are curious. You know, you get some people who are deeply wedded to their beliefs and not open to being curious, and that's fine, but sometimes that can also be a sign that they're struggling themselves as well. So but generally I think that when most I don't know any adults who either have children or work with children who don't want the best for the children in their care. You know, everyone, you don't go into teaching because you want to be a millionaire. You know, most of the people I work with work with children because they genuinely, you know, care about the kids in their care. And so ultimately you want your kids to be happy. You want your kids to be happy and well-rounded and kind to other children and confident in themselves and engage in, you know, health promoting behaviors in, you know, healthy ways, and all of that stuff. And so when you can see that actually approaching these conversations in this way, and actually just being, you know, being open to learning about body image and exploring some of these concepts is the best thing for the children in your care. Most people, that is somewhere where we can all meet, whatever your thoughts are on the bigger subjects. Like there is a middle ground there that everyone can agree on.
And maybe that has a nice ripple effect if you do have somebody that's maybe a bit stuck in their ways. They're like, oh, well, we're exploring this topic for the children, and then that kind of gets them interested in exploring their ideas. Something I wanted to ask you I think you were kind of touching on it there, but I assume that there will be people that are like, oh, you know, if we're glorifying diverse body types, then we're glorifying fatness, and that's unhealthy, and we're putting children in a negative place. So have you had questions or points like that, and what's the response?
You know what, it's really interesting. Most of these, when that comes up, it doesn't come up a huge amount with teachers. It can come up with teachers, particularly when they get stuck on the healthy eating parts of the curriculum. And you know, there's sometimes a cognitive dissonance there between connecting how, you know, if you follow the thread of, I don't know, a teaching activity, where does it come back to? If you keep following the thread, sometimes it will come back to anti-fatness, and it's not recognizing that, okay, we can talk about what diet culture is, and we can talk about how it's a system of beliefs that upholds, you know, a narrow body ideal and equates thinness with health and beauty and success and happiness. And they can totally get that. And then we'll say, and then the difficulty can be when we start talking about, you know, healthy eating and healthy eating policies that are about banning certain foods and promoting other foods. And that can feel like quite jarring, I think, sometimes. Mm. But you know, the places where these questions often come up the most, I've been asked this question by eating disorder professionals, which shows me that even in eating disorder services, there is weight stigma. I mean, I think we know this, mm-hmm. that eating disorder services, like all health services, weight stigma exists, and all of, you know, medical professionals have come from a, you know, medical background, and weight stigma exists in medical settings, and there's often a lack of eating disorder awareness amongst, you know, doctors, etc. And that is, again, that's a systemic criticism mm-hmm. of the system rather than a criticism of the individuals who are working within it. And it's also come up, there is often a concern that what we're doing at the Body Happy organization is at odds with what maybe public health teams are doing in weight management settings. And so there's this idea that, oh, well, we can't let children have eating disorders, so we need to promote positive body image, but also we can't let children get fat because that's, you know, bad for them as well. And so there is a tension there. And I'm going to like be absolutely, and I look at it head on and I'll name it and I say, yeah, there's a tension there. I can see why you feel that tension. But here's somewhere that we can all meet, okay? We know that health promoting behaviours are good for everybody, regardless of what they look like. We want children to be, you know, enjoy moving their body and enjoy how it makes them feel. We want children to have a happy, peaceful relationship with food, you know, and not have a fear of food and not develop issues with eating. We want children to treat other children with respect and dignity, no matter what they look like. Okay. So we know there is a strong evidence base that shows that when you celebrate body diversity and when you give children, you know, promote body esteem through body appreciation, regardless of what their bodies look like, and connection with their bodies, and we celebrate all different types of bodies, that improves body image. And when body image improves, children's engagement with health promoting behaviors improves, and also the way they treat other children. So ultimately, that's the end goal. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that if children do that their body shape is going to change, because body diversity is a thing, and there are so many different reasons that our bodies are different shapes and sizes, many of which are beyond our control. It's not mm-hmm. something that we can just kind of parent our way through, actually. But if the final end result is that you want children to, you know, enjoy sport, we know that body image is a major barrier to sport and PE, for example. Mm. We want to get more children active and more children involved in PE and actually enjoying PE, so it's not a traumatic experience for them. Then do it like this, you know. Mm-hmm. The fear is not, oh, well, they're all going to get fat. Like, actually, they're all going to start enjoying sport, you know, and let's take the body size away from the conversation and focus on those health promoting behaviors as the outcome rather than the weight.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting because I think where we are currently is such like a black and white way of thinking, in that either somebody is happy, it's either you can be fat or skinny, irrespective of whether you're happy in your body or not. And I think because of diet culture and almost the I don't know what the word would be, but like it's almost seen as a forced thing, in that in order to have a healthy body you need to exercise, but that's something that's forced upon people. And then in order to be healthy you have to eat a healthy diet, and that's also something that's forced upon somebody. But because we've also demonized rest and we've demonized certain food groups, it's made rest and certain food groups more desirable, but in a bad way. So I think that the way that people see it is like, if we tell people they can kind of do what they want and explore what they want and enjoy what they want, everybody thinks that's going to be sitting on their sofa eating like really unhealthy food all the time and gaining loads of weight. But actually, like, exercise doesn't have to be something that you hate. Like, exercise should be something that you enjoy, moving your body. And also the same with healthy eating, like, you know, learning to cook, that can be such an incredible hobby, and you find loads of new flavors and really explore the realm of your diet. I think we've made it that because the diet culture is something that people force themselves into losing weight and force themselves into a body type that's maybe not a not their set point, you then think that exercise and healthy eating also has to be something that people won't naturally tend to, whereas actually it's something really to, you know, find what you enjoy and what makes you happy and things like that. Because so many people love exercising. You just have to find what suits you.
Yeah. And I think it's also about removing those barriers in the first place. So, you know, recognizing that there will be people who exercise, you know, there'll be many people who exercise regularly, who eat a wide, varied range of food, who have, you know, great sleep habits, you know, really good stress management levels, and they live in a bigger body because they're naturally bigger, you know, because body diversity exists. And that's okay. And, you know, actually, part of this is removing the judgments that we're making these, like we're living in this culture that basically is telling us that we can tell how healthy someone is by looking at them, because we're using weight as a constant metric of health. And actually, we don't know anything about a person's health behaviors just by looking at them. Some people will be naturally big and some people will be naturally small. That doesn't mean that everyone who is naturally small is automatically healthy, and it doesn't mean that everyone who's naturally big is automatically unhealthy. And I think it's about, for me, it's about removing, taking body size off the table and thinking, right, what are the barriers to these health promoting behaviors, particularly for children? Some children won't like PE. They don't like the competitive nature of it. They might find the environment, particularly if they're neurodivergent, like the changing room environment, etc., might actually be really difficult for them. So let's look at what some of these barriers are. We know that some really great studies around weight stigma and internalized weight stigma amongst teaching staff. And there was one study that found that at the beginning of teacher training, they kind of measured their kind of levels of weights, anti-fat bias of these teachers at the beginning of their teacher training, and they all taught different subjects. And by the end of their teacher training, all of the subjects, teachers, their kind of weight stigma and anti-fat bias had reduced, apart from the PE teachers whose anti-fat bias had increased. And that's really interesting to me. I mean, this is a few years old now, this study, but it's really interesting because we know that we know that weight stigma is rife amongst sporting settings, and we know that it's rife amongst, you know, fitness culture, and we know that, you know, even like nutrition culture, healthism, like all of these ideas. If you're naturally really interested in fitness and nutrition, it might be that you hold a certain level of anti-fat bias and beliefs around, you know, individual responsibility, and that we all have total control over our body size and et cetera. And health is all about what we eat and how we move our body. And that's actually understandable if you're in that, you know, if you're in that bubble. But I think it's really interesting to note that, because actually it's about trying to be aware that that bubble exists and think, right, well, if we want more kids to be active and we want more kids to enjoy sport, how can we make it fun for them? How can we make it inclusive? Have they got the right kit? Is there a uniform that fits them? Kids are not going to want to, no wonder they're wanting to bunk off PE if their uniform doesn't fit them properly, you know? Are we making girls wear white uniform, like cricket whites, when they're on their period? Like, no wonder they're not wanting to do it. You know, all of these, those kind of like practical things can actually be ways to remove some of the barriers. And then also, are we making sure that we're celebrating a whole range of bodies? Like, what does the display area look like outside the PE department? Have we got a whole range of sporting heroes and athletes with a whole range of different bodies, so that children who don't have that stereotypical, you know, muscly six-pack kind of body that they're often being told they need in order to be a sporting hero, actually they can think, do you know what, maybe sport's for me too, you know, I can see, or maybe that's the gateway for them even taking part, you know. So actually, if it's about getting kids more active, we need to be celebrating all the different ways that our bodies are, and moving away from this kind of almost military approach to exercise. It's, you have to do this, you must do this, you know, do the like HIIT exercises, you know, high intensity interval training and the bleep test and do the daily mile run, the one I can't remember what it's called. It's like the daily mile, which lots of schools do. And they get the kids to run a mile a day, and it's really popular. And for some kids, that might be great. It might be an opportunity. They might love it. But for other kids, they'll hate it. So actually, what can we do with them? Could they do skipping instead? Could they have like a playground disco? You know, for kids who, for particularly, you know, if girls, adolescent girls are self-conscious, could we do like a glow in the dark disco with glow sticks? Could we do like, are there other things that we could do? All movement is valid. So, you know, there are so many brilliant benefits from exercise and movement and sport as well that have nothing to do with body shape. You know, it's confidence boosting, it's team skills, it's learning new skills. It's all of the, you know, brain health, bone health, heart health, all of that stuff. And actually, that isn't really anything to that's it's not about getting a six pack or you know, losing weight, you know.
Yeah, it takes me back to when I was at school, and I just have this really distinct memory of we had swimming lessons, and I completely, you know, I see that swimming lessons are very important from the aspect of, you know, swimming when you're on holiday and things like that is a really nice activity to do. It's also a safety thing in terms of if you're on a boat and you fall into the water. But I just think now, if there'd been more conversations about body image and comparison, because I just remember standing in the changing rooms terrified to take off my clothes. And I ended up most weeks just giving a letter to the PE teacher that I'd written myself saying Hannah's on her period, signed by my mum. And obviously she knew that every single week I wasn't on my period, but there was about 10 of us that just sat on the side and we were all on our period. How much better would it have been to either have a class on body image to talk about, you know, how we were feeling, or to say, okay, girls, I can see that swimming isn't for you. What can we do instead, like you've said? And now being an adult, you know, I hated PE at school. I absolutely hated it. And it was all because, like you said, you know, it was all to do with body image. And I just compared myself, and being in a changing room, it was awful. Now, sport is my biggest hobby, and it's, you know, I'm so glad that I have been able to find sport from going to university. And I think university is a great place because there's so many different things to try. You're all brand new at it, so you just throw yourself in or whatever and you make friends along the way. But if I hadn't had that, you know, why couldn't it have been like that at school? Rather than just doing sports, you know, the same sport every week, we could have done varied sports and all found something that we enjoyed. And I know that that might be difficult logistically because you've got big classes and you have to accommodate everyone's needs. But if you're, you know, I think back again to my school, and there was a handful of people that were great at sport. They were great at every sport, so they thrived in PE, whilst the other 50 of us were like, what on earth is going on? We might as well not be here. So you're not tailoring to everybody by doing that method either.
And there are some like brilliant initiatives going on. So like the Youth Sport Trust, Sport England's This Girl Can campaign, like all of that is really good. And there are some schools who are doing really good things. But I think that generally primary schools in our country get given a certain, state primary schools get given a sport and PE premium. So they get given a certain amount of money that they can spend on improving engagement in sport. And I would love to see some schools use some of that money on body image initiatives, because actually we know that body image is a major barrier. And yeah, it might not be someone coming in with, like, you know, a load of, I don't know, hula hoops or bean bags to like throw and like bollards to like run around, but actually, you know, having a body image workshop or getting some resources around body image and looking at body image, actually that could have a directly positive impact in pupil engagement in sport. And I don't think that that is well known enough, because it's still seen as this sort of slightly frivolous, girly teenage issue. Many schools, it's not being prioritized necessarily, unless you've got like really on it senior leadership teams or teachers who are pioneering it in their school. Generally, as a policy, like in education, it's like let's do one lesson in the year as part of a PSHE day. You know, it's not seen as like something to embed across the whole school, which is a shame because it's having a massive impact on people, not just the engagement in sport and PE, but also their overall health and well-being, whether they're raising their hand in class, their academic attainment, bullying in the playground, all of these things. Body image is a foundation for happy, engaged children in school, and it should be something that is put, it's a safeguarding priority. It really is. It should be something that should be right up there. I would love to see body image training be mandatory for all teachers, but that's a campaign for another day.
I think you're so right though. I think it underpins such a large aspect of our life and the way that we perceive ourselves, perceive other people. I think that is a massive impact on the relationship we have with ourselves, that we have with other people. And I think, you know, when you say that there are a lot of, I actually took part in This Girl Can when I was at uni, and that was really great. But like you say, it only really works at the moment if you've got people pioneering for it. And then that's kind of a bit of a postcode lottery as to whether you've got that in schools and you've got that support. And I think it would be fantastic as well, because if schools are really championing that, kids are then taking that messaging home, and then it becomes something at home as well. So it's something that almost, you know, rather than focusing on the specific child or the specific parent, going into schools, you're going to have such a bigger impact and widespread for everybody.
Yeah, that's the hope. And I think that schools are, you know, the majority of children in this country do attend schools. So school is a good way that we can reach all of those children. And we work with parents as well. And we've done, you know, we sometimes get requested to do workshops for home ed groups as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we often work with youth organizations. So, but ultimately, schools are where we get the biggest impact in terms of reaching the most beneficiaries of our work, which are children and young people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Molly, it sounds like you're doing absolutely incredible work, and you sound like a force to be reckoned with. So I'm very good to talk to you. Just to finish us off, do you want to tell us a little bit about your new book that's coming out? Yeah. I know you mentioned it briefly at the start, but just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So it's called Everybody. Oh, wait, hang on. I've got one. I've got one right next to me. So this is an advanced early copy. So
oh, yeah, look at that.
It's called Everybody, Celebrate, Respect, Accept All Bodies, Especially Your Own. So that advocacy piece is right front and centre. You know, it's about celebrating all bodies, especially your own, rather than love your own body. It's about, so
yes,
you know, and it's beautifully illustrated, you know, the design, it's the text is really broken up so that for young readers it's kind of really engaging. It's very funny, so I loved writing it because there are loads of, it doesn't take itself too seriously, it's not lectury. No kid wants to go to school all day and then come home and do like a textbook or have like some old person lecturing them about how they should think and feel about their body, because that's like, who wants to read a book like that? It's boring, especially not when you've got like TikTok on your phone, like so yeah, it's funny. It talks about the history of beauty standards and body ideals. Really importantly, I should have said, it's gender inclusive. So it's not just for, you know, boys or girls, you know, it's inclusive for kids who don't identify with the gender they're assigned at birth. And I think it's really important actually that all children, part of that advocacy piece, understand what their peers are going through. So I wrote like in the chapter about puberty, you know, there's information about, you know, erections and periods and all of that stuff that you would find in a body book. But I was really clear that actually, even if your body isn't going to be doing this stuff, you should still know about it, because half the people in your class, if you go to a co-ed school, are going to be going through this. But also writing about it, not just from like a science-y kind of biology perspective, but really, you know, like I said before, I'm really interested in culture. And so I talked about like, you know, Henry VIII and Sarah Bartman and, you know, the history of slavery and how that has impacted body ideals and the, you know, some of the really kind of wacky sort of beauty things that we've done over the generations, you know, and some of the things that we're seeing now in wellness and beauty culture, like snail goo on faces and blackhead vacuums and all of these wrinkle ironers. They sound like fake things, but they're real things. Mm. Some of these like really weird kind of wellness trends that we're seeing online. So yeah, it's practical as well. There's lots of practical advice, things like what should you do if your best friend talks about wanting to go on a diet, how to enjoy a shopping trip, you know, shopping guides, like all of clothes shopping. So yeah, there's a whole breadth of stuff in there, but it's done in a really funny, engaging, quite irreverent way. So, and it was a joy to write for this age group, an absolute joy to write for this age group.
Yeah, it sounds lovely. And I guess, you know, going back and rewriting those things that when we were young were almost seen as terrifying and awful and this, that and the other, and kind of, I guess, changing the narrative and seeing the excitement of it. And I love, love, love that you have made it kind of, you know, for any gender, or no gender or what have you, and also, you know, discussing things like periods and, you know, erectile dysfunction and things like that. Because I have a distinct memory, and I remember being so angry as a year six pupil that they bought out the tampons and the pads, but before they brought them out, they asked the boys to go into the next room, and they were going to learn about all things to do with boys and men, and we were going to learn about all things to do with women and girls. And I was like, but my dad is a man, my brother's a man, you know, my future partner, like my friends, I want them to know about what I'm going through. And I remember saying that to the teacher, and they didn't really have a response. And then a couple of years later, I went to stay with my brother because he's like 10 years older than me. And my dad, being from the generation that he was from, would never buy my mum a tampon. Like, you know, he'd probably like slip it in the bag and be a bit embarrassed or whatever. And I remember saying to my sister-in-law, well, she was my brother's girlfriend at the time, I was like, I've got my period. Like, oh, I'll go and get Liam to get some from the shop. And I was like, he can't go to the shop to get them. And she was like, why not? Like, that's totally fine. And it was that shift in perspective that I was like, yeah, it's totally okay to talk about those things, and men and boys need to be aware of them, and vice versa. So I'm so happy to hear
and
that.
And the history of like the stigma around that stuff is so interesting. And it was so interesting researching that. And I write about that in the book, like go right back to like ancient Roman times and where this stigma around periods and bodies and menstruation came from. But putting it in a way that is that it's almost like, you know, have you heard of the Horrible Histories series?
Yes.
There's a vibe of that in this book as well. So, yeah, I'm just really excited to get it into kids' hands now, and really excited to go into lots of schools and talk about it soon.
Absolutely. Oh, Molly, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. I'm so excited for all of this and the future that it holds. Where can people go if they want to find out more about the book, find out more about you, the organisation?
Yeah. So we've got a website, obviously, which is bodyhappyorg.com. So B-O-D-Y, happy, and then O-R-G.com. We're the Body Happy Organisation. So if you Google us, you'll find us. And I'm in all the places that you'd expect. So Body Happy Org is on Instagram. And I'm also on Instagram myself, Molly J. Forbes. And you can find, you know, the first book is called the second book, this one that's coming out in June for kids, is called Everybody, and the first book is called Body Happy Kids, and that one's for grown-ups.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. This has been such an amazing conversation.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.